There's a proposal that we go ahead and start the meeting, discuss the issues, but take no decisions. And when we think we've done enough of it, we'll look at whether we've improved on the quorum. We need, I believe, 7 more people to be able to take decisions. But surely we can discuss. There are no others, but can just come together in a venue and not talk. So, if there's no objection to that proposal, I'd like to chip in.
There is no objection, Speaker. Just to say that the deputy chief whip has gone for hospital for something that we will discuss with you. As we speak now, she's in hospital. So she would have been here as well, so she's one of those who are not here. So it's an apology that we're putting
on. Thank you. Are there any other apologies? So we're now into the meeting, Honourable Waters.
Honourable Stina has given his apologies, and Honourable Natasha Mazzoni is on her way. She's been delayed by traffic. Thank you.
Ma'am, we also receive foreign apologies, Mr. Parry, Mr. Singh, Singh, Mr. Martin, Ms. September, Ms. Fananarva of the IFP, yes, and Deputy Chief.
Okay, so look at those apologies, Honorable Bumulana.
Honorable Khadab is on the way. It's a bit crippling, you know.
Okay, we'll notice the apology. They can now look at whether our agenda is adequate. Is the agenda okay? Agreed? Minutes? Can we look quickly at the minutes? Minutes of the meeting of Tuesday, the 17th May. First page is just a list of those who attended. Second page, any amendments on that page? Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. And 7 is the last page. Honorable Deputy Speaker.
I just wanted to say that my initials are...
I always have more than the rest of my...
I just want to correct my initials there, Mr. Speaker. My initials are SL in the first page. I'm sorry, I missed.
You're so slow, Chief. That's on the first page.
I was not in my chair when you...
Okay, let's correct the spelling of the Deputy Speaker's initials. Oh, the initials of the... If this is name. May I have a motion for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Kwai moves, Honorable Woi seconds, and there is no objection. And minutes have been adopted. So, we now come to the report. Are there any matters arising? Let me get to that point before we go to the report. Matters arising?
Ma'am, those will be covered in the
discussions. Well, Dagane, can you lead us on the item 5?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Rules Committee gave us a mandate as a subcommittee to look at 3 issues. One issue was an amendment to the National Assembly Rule 53A. Another one, B, was the submission on principle of coaching from a court judgment. Another issue, that is the last one, was the issue of the report issue of the terms of National Assembly and the amendment of the 53A12. We met, Honourable Speaker, as a subcommittee to look at the issue that was referred to us. And then we look at the rule as it stands, as the interim rule of the National Assembly, Rule 53A. Based on the discussion that we had in the Rules Committee, we agreed that to rework and then sub 10 of Rule 53A. That is page 3 of our report, and I have the report is submitted to our members. Page 2 of the report, and then we rephrase it the way it is rephrased. And then we dealt with the issue 14. We added sub 14. With sub 14, we're trying to accommodate the whole issue of the precinct. That we're trying to avoid making the chamber also the precinct. But you know, when we put some amendment on 11, where we are including a chamber as a precinct where the security forces or security services, to be correct, can also enter in the event of a really serious threat to property, to life. And it's an issue that we wanted also to put it in, because it's a technical amendment, when I was speaking, not a substantive issue. Because we have dealt with the essence of what we are trying to do as members of parliament, also having observed ourselves as members of parliament, what happened. We thought that it is important just to deal with the question of the precinct, but also ensure that the chamber, because we thought that in terms of the law and then powers and privileges, we quoted there on our speaker, and that indicates to us that you can use the security services when there's also a threat right inside the chamber. You can't wait because themselves are allowed to enter the chamber. And but in terms of the protection services, the only time in that are requested. The point that we are raising there on security services that you use powers and privileges act. And that is simply mean that is section 2, sub 2 of the act when there is immediate danger to the life or safety of any person or damage of any property. That if that has to happen inside the chamber, and we can't do anything, we can't avoid then the security services to be called upon to assist us who come in there. Because they are not under our control. We can't tell them whether they come there unarmed or not, because they are not under our control. But of course the speakers will call upon them to come in to assist us in that. If really there is absolute danger to life and the safety of any person, or damage to any property. That's an issue really that we wanted to put in, to consider. There was a lot of discussion about this issue. And supporting the all other matters in the people is just in terms of sub 11, there are a lot of highlighted of all this within there that we have removed out of the discussion that we had. We also removed this power and privileges in Unity Parliament, the Legislature Act number 4. That one we have deleted it, but we have included the same powers and privileges as in terms of 4 sub 2, because that one allows you, on our speaker, to do the work if there's immediate danger to life and the safety of person and inside the chamber. And then, but in terms of the 12, there also that issue, really, on our speaker, is about the technical issue that we have removed to a multi-party, because we have said that 12, that whenever a member is still removed from the chamber in terms of this rule, the circumstances of such removal must be referred by the speaker within 24 hours for consideration by a subcommittee of the rules committee appointed for that purpose. It was not at the time the rules committee had not accepted it. The rules committee met and accepted that now this part is going to happen. On stating, Honourable Speaker, really as it is, it is, I think it's very clear. It's only 11 and 10 that had a long discussion in the rules committee. We thought the reweighting now and some deletion there will assist us to agree and ensure that Rule 53A is acceptable for us to submit it for consideration by the House. That is in terms of the rule 53A.
Thanks, Honorable Ntakane. Honorable Mzumi.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, when we're deliberating on 10 and 11, an interesting point came up, as they will continuously as things progress during the Bush of Parliament, and that was regarding the President's presidential security. Now, the presidential security armed, and we did note that in the last instance when you instructed, well, when it was instructed that the parliamentary security enter the chamber, the presidential security immediately came in and they made a circle around the president. So we have to keep into, hold into consideration that while we have this particular these rules in place, there also has to be a form of dialogue between yourself and the presidential security to inform them that it is the rule of the House that there may be no armed security forces on the floor unless there is a threat to life. So somewhere, Speaker, we're going to have to find a way to accommodate the presidential security as well as accommodate the parliamentary security, because other parties will then always be able to turn around and say, but Speaker, you're being biased because the President is allowed armed security, but I'm not. So we're going to have to look at that, and it's something we've got to bear in mind.
My senior hand, Forest, Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, Jefferson, I think it's the matter that Honorable Mazon is referring to is the matter that I raised. But I think we just need to really be clear that the presidential security don't necessarily enter the house unless there is something. They stand just outside the door. They only enter when there is a threat to the president. Otherwise, don't stand inside. And I think they know that. That's what they have been practicing, I think, all along. And I'm not sure whether there is anything that we may need to do. But currently, what we have seen is that they come with the president and then they stop at the entrance of the main door. And when the president comes in, he comes in alone. But of course, is that once they respect or they see some threats that they have in the president, definitely they jump in. We've seen that. Thanks.
Honorable Julie and Honorable Kubai.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. We also discussed and deliberated in the subcommittee, Honorable Speaker, on the fact that there probably needs to be some other security protocol that must be developed. And we say that could not be contained in rules. That is a separate matter. Because we also raised our concern from images in the media, we ascertained that some of the members, including the leader of EFF, had his own security, who in fact became part of parliamentary security, and that obviously cannot be tolerated. So the need for the proper uniforms, etc., of parliamentary security was again stressed. But we concluded that we cannot deal with all of those matters in the rules. That is part of a different set of rules and protocols that apply to the security services of the different arms of state. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Kubai, Honorable Waters.
Thanks, Speaker. I'm part of the team, so if you'd like to pardon me, because some of the issues maybe they might have to be corrected. I just need clarity on. I think the issue in terms of the armed and the time where it's not armed is something that is very critical that we've got to look at. And in taking into what happened the last time where you found things flying, you have no control of that time. And I think we shouldn't constrain the presiding officers, because once we become too prescriptive in the rules, it will make it difficult for the speaker to... The presiding officer has the responsibility and duty to protect all members in the House. Now, once we become too prescriptive, there might be no time for the speaker to consult anyone if someone's life is in danger, for example. So I would rather urge that while we put in some of the things that it shouldn't be that at this time this is when people should come in, but because the mechanisms of reporting and evaluating how members have been ejected from the house. That is a safeguarding tool to make sure that presiding officers don't do what is not supposed to be done. The second issue which I want to raise, and my colleagues will have to clarify for me, is I don't find there's an issue of repeated offences. I misbehave in the house, cause chaos, then I am suspended for 7 weeks. I am 10, before even 7 days. I wish it would be 7 days. I don't care, I'm saying I wish. So, then it's 7 days. Then, within the 2 days I'm back, I do the same thing. Then I'm chased away for another 7 days. I come back 2 days again. Within I'm back, I do the same thing. This is where I just found the rules a bit silent. And it shouldn't be the case. Surely we should be able to say in a different case where it's a repeated offense. Because it seems like I can just do this, go do my own work in the ground, my political work, there are no consequences for 7 days, I come back. Some of the people, for example, if I'm a professional and have another income, I'm a doctor, I'm a very skilled practice of sporting author. So even if you deduct from my salary, there's no punitive action that I'm feeling. So I can repeatedly do this offense. And that's my concern, because part of the rules is to ensure that the effectiveness of running of the house, and if we see repeated offenses as part of destabilizing the work, surely we should be able to pronounce it properly and say what we want to see out of it. So I would recommend that we change that and reflect on repeated offenses that we take as a different route, not the same procedure that we are doing.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, just on the point that's been raised for repeat offenders, as far as I remember, you may correct me, that in the rules currently there is provision for more severe punishment. So if there's 5 days, 10 days, 15 days, if I remember, maybe 20. Okay. So I mean, and I remember you suspended me once for 5 days, Madam Speaker. All those years ago. Yes? Hey, yeah. it was quite a while ago. Just on the other point about the Parliamentary Protection Services, I think, I don't want to belabor the point, but I think it needs raising. We need to sort out the uniforms sooner rather than later. Obviously, it doesn't have to go into the rules. I mean, there's no point in, but we really need to sort that out. It's unacceptable that leaders of any party, or the opposition party in particular, can have some bodyguards dressed the same, and just walking onto the floor of Parliament. I mean, it's a danger to other members as well. So, apart from being illegal, I think it is a danger to other members, sir. So I think that needs to be sorted out as a matter of urgency. As far as the Presidential Protection Services are concerned, I mean, they do sit in the bays of Parliament where the DG sits, and they are armed there. So as you say, that needs to be looked at. Obviously not in the rules, but, we need to look at that. But for the way I read this, the time they would be allowed to walk onto the floor of Parliament is if Section 11 is invoked, where other security forces can come in. It wouldn't be before that. And I think we just need to engage with the protection services of the presidency to ensure that they understand the rules and we understand where they came from as well. So there's a meeting of minds. Thank you.
Honourable Frolic, Honourable Chief Wood.
No, thank you, Honourable Speaker. The Honourable Waters has covered it towards the end of his input. Suffice to say that we must keep in mind also the regulations and the laws on which the Presidential Protection Service operates and what their core function is. And it will be, and maybe that can be part of the discussion, Honourable Speaker, it will be very difficult to regulate how they protect the head of state and also the Deputy President. But there must be some clarity. I think in generally the spirit is that they do not participate in the other functions that the protection services or parliamentary services operate. They don't get involved in those type of things, but need to be sensitive that they do not really need the permission of anyone when they deem a situation to be dangerous and where they think they need to protect their principles.
Honourable Chief Whip.
No, we are well covered by Honourable Frolic, Speaker. In fact, that's the point we have repeatedly made. Again, not in defense of the protectors of the president, But if where they are seated, they are of the view that the life of the head of state is under threat, what then becomes their responsibility? Now, I understand where comrades are, I understand where colleagues are coming from. I fully understand. But the reality is that we have a parliament that has become quite violent. Violent with a head of state in attendance. What then becomes the role of the protectors of the head of state under those circumstances? So, but I agree with that, all of us must have clarity. But from where was it said, the constitution empowers the protectors of the head of state to safeguard his life. And probably our too, under these circumstances. But that's the other issue, Chair, that we might probably discuss. How do we safeguard our own lives as we get this clarity of the work of the protectors of the head of state?
Honorable, let me take Honorable Mazzoni and then come back to you, but I also want to have a word on the matter.
Honorable Speaker, thank you. Just the last point. Chair, I've been very lucky to have been in a few parliaments in the world where heads of state have been in. And the protocol normally is if the head of state is in danger, he's removed from the danger situation. And I think it's got to the point where things do go so crazy in our parliament that the head of state should be removed from the house. But here's the thing, where would we move him to? Because as far as I know, there's not really a safe room anywhere near the outside of parliament. So perhaps we have to look at maybe the Honourable Secretary's office. Rachel Joe's got a good solid lock on it. And Protection Service is literally removing the President from the danger situation. And I'll tell you why, Speaker. In a situation where the President's life is in danger, his bodyguards do have the right to use any form of force to protect the President. And they can include firing a weapon. Now, in our chamber, if you fire a weapon, and unfortunately, there's a state of chaos around and that bullet goes astray, it might hit one of us instead of hitting the person it was intended to hit. And that's the worst case scenario, which I never thought in my wildest dreams we would have to discuss. But we do have to discuss worst case scenario now. So Chair, maybe in your deliberations, as a suggestion, you could suggest that when there is a situation of danger, the President's security must remove him from the house, take him to a safe area at the back, which they can even change it so that people don't know what the safe area is. Lock the door so that the President is out of imminent danger, so that at no time would there be a chance for firearms needing to go off in the house.
Madam Bishop, my understanding is that we have agreed that the matter of his protection services of the President is a matter that is between the leadership of the institution and the President. They must discuss it how it works. It can't be guided by the rules because you can't control them how they should. In fact, anyway, in the last sitting, they don't know how they came in to protect their principal. No one can stop them to do so. It would be illegal in fact to interfere when they are protecting the individual principal to do so. Their view was that we should leave that to the leadership of the institution, Honorable Speaker, and all those who are in securities. It is a discussion that is satisfied for yourself only, really, to deal with it. It's not part of the rules. The point that Rule 53A, there are a set of rules. We start on Rule 51, 52, 53, 53, and 54. All these are set of rules. And then 54 is when then the 5, 10, 15, 20. The point that we had, in fact, if a person is running some spaza shop, he can just always misbehave and go home 20 days, enjoys it. The real problem is that the court has not ruled in what we try to do in terms of powers and privileges. We are still waiting for that decision, whether we can find people, take salaries from them or not, once the court took a decision on that matter, or take the decision that much, then we'll come and revisit this one to ensure that we're tightening it up. Because even that one, there was a point that was raised, Honorable Speaker, that but a person who's very well empowered in terms of resources, finding 1,000 rand, 2,000 rand, 3,000 rand is nothing for a person who's busy doing other things. We should look at other ways of doing it. But the cost is very tight. Therefore, once the court gave a ruling on that, I think we're able then to tighten up in terms of the salary issue. But we need to go beyond that. But we don't know exactly what is beyond that. The view was that the leader of the institution, leader of parties, when they meet, they would have a discussion on some of the matter. They may find a solution on some of the issues that you are dealing with at the full tournament side. Because the rule wouldn't assist us until the court gave a ruling that this matter has been outstanding for 2015. And it seems they're not really coming forward to give a rule on this matter. That's why it's very difficult to take a very definitive decision on it.
Deputy Speaker?
Before you speak, when we come to Parliament, we affirm or take an oath that we will obey by the Constitution and or all other laws, as we say. When we don't, not once, repeatedly, what happens? I'm just posing that as a question, members and so on. So I think there ought to be a case to be made for the consequences for an adherence to, yeah.
Thanks, Honourable Member, for what I think was a useful discussion. Many of the issues might not go into the rules, but they inform even our engagements with the Presidency or the Executive, the relevant cluster in the Executive, and even the possible protocol, as has been mentioned, because I think only people who really have no clue why they are here wouldn't be informed by the lesson of actual events. And indeed, the rules started off making assumptions that everybody that come here indeed will behave honorably. But currently in the fifth term, we are faced with a totally different environment. So we've got to upgrade what we do and the protocols and the documentation or the framework that, you know, enable us to manage this place on behalf of South Africans. So all of this will go into not only the rules, but the engagements and other actions that we are, in fact, we have to take in response to lessons that unfold before everybody. I think I must address to the Secretary the areas that require indeed a response relating to differentiation, the ability for us to differentiate between people who come into the House as Parliamentary Protection Services and others. I mean, it only took people to dress like Parliamentary Protection Services, and they were able to come in and be part of that whole setup, and I really think that matter has become very, very urgent. I also think there's a lot more we need to respond to as Parliament. Issues of, for instance, the upgrades in general in the environment around the precinct. The ease with which people are able to come and go. Yes, it's a parliament of the people, but surely I think there's a lot more now that has to guide us as we continue to have a parliament that is open for the public to come and interact with us, but we can't do it. I think we need to look also at the office of the Sergeant at Arms and see what strengthening is necessary in that particular office. After all, we learned that in another parliament, it was the Sergeant at Arms that was called upon to come in and act accordingly when a person entered parliament with a gun. And a disaster might have happened,
but the sergeant at arms was able to do what they were required to do. So I think we've got to also, you know, continue to look at how else we strengthen our parliament, which must indeed be a people's parliament, but be a parliament that protects its own members, but that protects the dignity also of parliament. And indeed, I agree with those that are saying, in fact, Honorable Ntakane says, we need to look at what more. A comrade, not a comrade, an honorable member, it was Honorable Filtane, who said we ought to consider what else we can do. To take him up on that point, we are trying to invite leaders of political parties to a tea before we disappear the campaign, if possible tomorrow morning. So just around an hour, we start to talk about this. So we would like to have honorable members over tea to talk about this matter of national importance. It's not only around wine that we can talk seriously. We surely can do it over tea.
The tea must also be non-alcoholic, Mr. Speaker.
The tea must definitely be... No, the tea will be non-alcoholic, I can promise you. So we can really start seriously engaging on what it is we are faced with and how else we must try and improve the situation. After all, we're here. Even though this is an election year, we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to our people, and we would like to make sure that we take that moment before we go to the campaign. Honorable members, that is the report of the subcommittee. Is there any...
Honorable Speaker, that one of the Rule 53A,
yes.
The other matter that we refer to a subcommittee, the ruling by the president.
Yes.
And
no, what I wanted to say was, is there any objection to us agreeing on what the report has brought us to the, brought back to the Rules Committee? Are we agreeing on that 53A part of the report? Honorable Waters?
Speaker, yes, we support the proposed rule. Can I just mention, you raised a few issues just now. And the other issue I was deeply concerned about, I mean, I didn't realize it had happened until it was brought to my attention later on, was I believe one of the EFF ladies had a brick in her handbag. And she, I didn't realize that, actually. And using it to hit protection service officers over the head with, which is extremely dangerous. And I don't know how we actually address that and prevent bricks coming into Parliament, but we need to look at that quite seriously. I mean, it's, you have them flying all over the place. It's going to cause a lot of, you know, hurts to people. You know?
Well, the time has come for us to consider things that we have previously rejected, like our bags going through security screening. Because how are you going to know what is in the bag if you don't check? Because our pride is going to be hurt. I don't mind my bag going through the electronic, so that I, you know, the parliament can be sure that this bag is not bringing in anything dangerous. Honorable Chief Whip?
The only difficulty is that the electronics can pick up a brick. No. At the moment, as things are, the brick will not be picked up by that scanner. It picks something metal. So we need to think, and I agree with the Honorable Waters, you know, it's just for people to literally prepare themselves for war in a chamber. My worry even goes beyond that, as we discussed on the figure at the head of the institution. I think as the Rules Committee, how do we, with the recent happenings and the posters that we are seeing, how do we safeguard the lives of members in the chamber? To me, that's a fundamental question, Speaker. Thanks.
Yeah, my interpretation, I think, is in relation to the issue raised by the Deputy Speaker, is that the issue of the Constitution and the laws is also provided in the Code of Conduct for members. So if a member really breaks the laws or the Constitution by virtue of conduct, the Code of Conduct provides for that. But if they break the laws by other means, other than conduct itself, or by writing something else, but the Code of Conduct provides for that for now. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam. Just to then confirm that there's further to Rule 53A, the text you have before you, there is one change. It's on the screen, if you can just scroll up further. Down. You'll see there where it references to powers and privileges, and provided that the security services may intervene directly anywhere in the precincts, and then you add, and in the chamber, in terms of Section 42, because under 14, precincts now excludes the chamber for purposes of this rule, and therefore you have to add and in the chamber here at sub 11. It's a technical change.
Honourable Zoni?
Chair, this has been a matter of discussion ad nauseum in the committee, and again I refer you to the judgment. The Concord judgment that came out. And the Concord judgment, whether we like it or not, says that there may not be armed forces on the floor of a chamber. So, I don't like the fact that it's just been added in now before it's even been discussed. So please, can we actually just highlight that or remove it? Because we're busy discussing it and we haven't agreed upon it yet. So people don't even know what's been added there. We have to look at the Concord judgment, and we have to look at it seriously. And that's one of the reasons we got the law advisors, etc., etc. We can't just willy-nilly just now add chamber when we have a Concord judgment that says it has to exclude the chamber. So it's not as easy as just saying, well, let's do that. So we need to put a little bit more thought than that into it.
Can I take Julie first, and then I'll go back to Ms. Jandip and Honourable Frolic. Speaker, we have a state law advisor here. From what we understood when they presented to the subcommittee was the critical component of this paragraph 11 is where there is immediate danger to the life or safety of any person or damage to any property. So clearly, in such circumstances, it must be, in terms of the Powers and Privileges Act, it is permissible to then call in, and this links on to what Honourable Kabai said before. The presiding officers also have a responsibility to safeguard the lives of the members of the House so that we don't have any upheaval that will really just go beyond any control. So from what we understood, in such cases, because there is a provider, only when there's an immediate danger to the life or safety of any person, that is permissible. If the SACO advisor could perhaps just respond to that, because that was what he presented. I see he's smelling a lot. I don't know if he is ready to answer on that. Chairperson, just to say, it's currently in Section 4 of the Powers and Privileges Act.
Let's check, Mr. Andy.
Chair, this change that was being proposed here is only in response to the new sub-rule, sub-rule 14, which says for the purposes of this rule, that's Rule 53A, precincts excludes the chamber. And Section 4, sub 2 of Powers and Privileges requires that in the case of immediate danger, the security forces may in fact enter. And this, therefore, there that is just a consequential change to the inclusion of sub-rule 14, which says that for the purposes of this rule, precincts excludes the chamber. If you didn't put in and the chamber, then it would say that police may not enter into the chamber in the face of immediate danger.
Honourable Pandit.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Mine is just a question of clarity in terms of the definition of what the chamber is. Does it include, and I'm sure the subcommittee have discussed it, does it include the public gallery or does it exclude the public gallery? Because from where is it, sometimes we can get very worried with what is happening in the public gallery. That has an immediate impact on what is happening with the members downstairs.
We have the state law advisor here. Oh, well. How? I no longer recognize Edva. He's looking so much younger. Edva.
And I'm a year older than I was yesterday, today. Speaker, under speaker, my colleague Aisha will deal with the matter. Thanks.
Thank you, Speaker. The removal of the inclusion of the new definition of precinct was precipitated by Section 2 of the Privileges Act. In Section 2, Parliament and its precinct is defined to include the Chamber. Now, from within Rule 53, capital A, from 1 to 11, we use the term Chamber and we use the term precinct. Chamber is to include only the House, and the precinct we intend to mean outside of the Chamber, but all of the properties that makes up the parliamentary precinct. In order for, in our view, in order for the new Rule 58 to be constitutionally sound, we had advised that we redefine the term precinct for purposes of this rule only to exclude the Chamber. So the effect of that redefinition or redefining the definition mean that under normal circumstances, when Rule 53 capital A applies, when we talk about protection services being provided within the Chamber, they will be provided by parliamentary protection services. However, in circumstances where there is violence and immediate danger to persons and property, under those circumstances, the parliamentary protection services will perform functions within the chamber, as well as security services under the auspices of Section 4. So, in total, and in summary, we would accept Mr. Hondik's advice that the words "and in the chamber" be included, because without it would mean that Section 4 would be applicable everywhere but in the chamber. That would defeat the purpose of the rule. Thanks, Peter.
Honourable Mazwan.
I think we must make the definitions, because I don't think we'll be understood properly. The Concord judgment rules on Section 11, they said no member may be removed from the House by security services. And that is undisputable, that you have to be removed by parliamentary security forces. That's 100%. Chair, this is what worries me, and it worries a lot of us in the opposition. And please just bear with us. It says where there is immediate danger. So I'll use myself as an example, because Peter, you know how well behaved I am in the House. Imagine you rule that I must be removed, and I'm in a bad mood that day, and I say, I refuse to go. Chair, you know that Honourable Waters is going to say, I agree with Honourable Mazwan, she's not going anywhere. And Honourable Lottery is also going to get in there, and she's going to say, hell no, we won't go, and they're going to back me up, and my whole caucus is going to be like, the Speaker must go. Now, I know for a fact that I would never bring a rock into the House. So I pose no immediate danger to you. But you as a chairperson go, actually, considering they're all shouting at me here, I think there's immediate danger. And you call in the police services to come and remove me, because you assume that there is immediate danger, because we've all been very vocal and everyone's on the heat and chanting, etc. So this is the problem, is how do we determine what immediate danger is? Because unless I've produced a weapon, or unless I have caused you to believe that there is immediate danger by breaking a table or throwing a bottle, or, as happened, throwing a muckarumper, I'm not actually causing immediate danger. So we actually need to know how we're going to divine. And it's not for us, it's for you as presiding officers to safeguard yourselves. How are you going to define what immediate danger is?
Honorable Deputy Speaker and Honorable
I was wondering whether, and this is a question to members who are posing this question, whether it is your understanding that the judgment, the Constitutional Court judgment, precludes that clause in what we are referring to that says the police do not need anybody's permission if life and property is in danger. So it's their judgment, not the presiding officer's judgment. They don't need the presiding officer's ruling or indication. This is what I want to understand. And in that case, if that is so, I believe then that inclusion of that phrase is an appropriate protection for them in the event that they do that. So it's not my, because you think that I've been biased. My decision is them assessing the situation. And you've said this right there watching this. So they make a judgment call that this one requires intervention. Nobody can prevent us from doing so. This is my understanding of issue as it stands, unless we understand it differently. Thanks, Madam Speaker.
Speaker, I honestly believe that Honourable Madani is just a little difficult. If we look at this rule, 53A, there's a progression. First of all, the member refuses to obey and to recognize the chair. Thereafter, if the chair cannot maintain the order in the house, the chair will say, the member must please leave. Then the member refuses. Then the sergeant at arms is called. Parliamentary Protection and Services, if necessary, comes in. Then the member resists attempts to be removed from the chamber. Then it's building up. There is also a rule that says no member may in any manner whatsoever physically intervene, etc., etc. So for as long as they shout, etc., there's no physical issue. Then it builds up, Chairperson. Now if you read 11, it says, in the event of violence. So clearly, it is on such occasions that there is an element of violence. We deliberately removed a reasonable prospect of violence because that was what the concern was about. How would the presiding officer determine if there is a reasonable prospect? So we said, no, we can't assume. So therefore, once there is violence, now clearly, we can't then say, let's now differentiate. Then it must be in the chamber as well. We were very, very sensitive about what the court ruled, what it is allowed, and what is not allowed. But Section 4.2 of the Powers and Privileges Act has not been outlawed. So clearly, you know, it is the responsibility of the presiding officers to protect members when there is an element of violence that comes in. So honestly, I think we must all understand that even from a very sensitive point of view, to state Lord Bader, who have scrutinized all the rulings, etc., they have no problem with it. So I would like to propose that we adopt it. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Delange, and Honorable Deliza, and Honorable Dudley.
I just want to make two legal issues. Firstly, I think the members should go and read the judgment again. I don't think the interpretation of the judgment is correct as it's been stated here. The judgment only decided one point, and it's a very technical point. It had to decide whether the mechanism you create to remove people from Parliament could be in an Act of Parliament or whether it should be in the Rules of Parliament. And the court said because the Constitution says subject to the rules, the mechanism to remove people from Parliament should have been in the rules as it is now in 53A and not in Section 11. That's the only issue the court decided. On the issue of what mechanism, the court didn't say one single word about the mechanism that's used. Secondly,
then the court specifically dealt with one party's proposal that there's a separation of powers issue that had to be decided. Can you use the police in parliament? And the court specifically said, because of the decision we made about the instrument where you must place the clause, we specifically do not decide this issue. And the court left the issue open. So I want to be very clear that the court only made a decision on where it should be, and it should be in the rules and not in the Act of Parliament. Secondly, that nothing was said about the mechanism, which is in section, used to be in section 11, is 953A. And as far as the police is concerned, the court specifically said, we leave open that question. It's not necessary for us to decide it. It actually said that in the judgment. So I think we should look at the judgment again. Secondly, on the issue of whether the chamber should be added, it's a legal reason why you add it. It's for the legal protection of the police. Usually a police is protected because of Section 49 in the Criminal Procedure Act. You can arrest people, etc., etc. There is legal protection. With this removal, it's a new instrument that's created. It didn't exist before. So if you're asking the police to do certain actions in terms of the removal, as will be the case as the rule has now been amended to say, when there is violence, the Speaker can adjourn the House, call the police in then to remove the members that are busy with the violence. In that case, if you don't add and chamber, you're not giving legal protection when they're acting in the chamber. So that is the reason it should be there, for the legal protection when they are removing people. Because remember, when they aren't arresting people, it's the Speaker asks them to come into the House and remove them because of violence. There must be legal protection for the police, else we're leaving them vulnerable and they can then personally be sued one day. So for that reason, a legal reason, and the chamber should be added. So just those two legal issues I wanted to raise here.
Honorable Titina and Honorable Dadjo.
Thank you, Chair. Just listening to Honorable Mazoe earlier, I thought she was agreeing. Her only concern was that how do you define immediate danger? But I think the caveat, which is in the beginning of Rule 11, expressly indicates in what circumstances. So the latter part of the rule should be read in, I mean, currently with the first part in my view. So I just wanted to persuade you that probably that would cover at the concern that she was raising.
So that the ACDP agrees with Rule 53 as it is in the report and with the inclusion of add in the chamber, which we feel is entirely necessary in terms of achieving what that rule plans to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mtaka. Okay.
Speaker, we support. I've just got one question though. Last week when there was violence and there was damage to property and resort to TV, where were the protection services?
The police.
The police. Outside the chamber, when the doors are being smashed, where were they? That's a question.
I've asked for actual video footage, so I can see the events spilling out to the passages and all that I pick up on TV, because I haven't had a full picture. And indeed, I'm also interested, where were the police? Honorable Mtakana?
No, Madam Speaker, no, I think we are clear now on this matter, because there's been an issue for many months of discussion. And I think it's just based on Honorable Mazoni not trusting us that we are taking care of them. And we have covered the point now, Honorable Speaker. I think Honorable Walter accepts this. And it's affecting all of us, because we've been debating this matter for some time. I think now we have resolved the question of 53. Okay.
Now we go on to item C, ruling on quoting from court judgments and other documents. Honorable Mtakane?
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. And the matter was referred to us by the Rules Committee. We have looked at the matter, but by the ruling by the Honorable Deputy Speaker on the previous ruling and a similar nature. And then we afforded the Honorable Steinhausen to make a presentation or representation in the meeting. and he also considered the submission, which is submission by the Deputy Speaker, in which he explained the principle of the ruling. And then the subcommittee really, we confine ourselves only on the matter for the principle of ruling. And then we have viewed that we wouldn't really overturn the ruling by any presiding officer, but we consider some of the principle of the ruling. And we made certain observation and recommendation. One issue really was the issue again of respecting the inhabit of every member of parliament, that there shouldn't be any person who should end up there in the same time as a fraudster without providing a motion of a substantive motion. We thought that would be wrong to do that way. Just confirm that as an issue that assists us as members of parliament to protect the integrity of members of parliament. We raised an issue too, that of course, if there's something that the allegation of wrongdoing on my part as a member, any member really can bring to attention the National Assembly to do so only by way of a substantive motion. And if it is agreed, then can be debated and then taken a decision on. And on the judgment, we raised some issues. Firstly, we raised the issue that we recognize that the court's judgment involved not only allegations but findings. And it was our view that it is affirmed that members should be able to quote from them, but must also accurately. Simply means that there shouldn't be selective quotation on the finding of the court. We point that we're raising that such quotation may indeed be about a court finding that a member acted unlawfully. That would relate to the factual state of affairs. And then four on page five, we're raising an issue that despite the court finding, members should not verbally abuse each other through name calling, disparaging and insulting personal remarks about any member, do not contribute in our view to the meaningful debate in the chamber. We've made that point. And then sub five, we made the point there that there would be instances where, of course, there will always be disputes about the accuracy of the quotation. Our view that the presiding officer should be able to exercise legislation in ruling on these matters. This may include, of course, studying the answer to determine the context and to verify the facts. That was our view in terms of the another issue that was referred to us was really, I think, Rules 53A, I think we have dealt with it in detail, we concluded on that matter, was really the ruling that, in terms of that was the 9th of September 2015, Honorable Roto ordered Honorable Malema to leave the National Assembly. We have made a call to them. And then, because of parliamentary reply, one point that we are making there, Honorable Speaker, that is page 6, sub 2. The subcommittee acknowledged that the House Chairperson appropriately exercised their discretion in accordance with the circumstances, that the relevant rules and procedures were correctly followed. There was a view that as an incident took place after the business of the House for the day had been concluded, the House Chairperson could have, that is a view really, it's not necessarily what happened, but it's a view of the subcommittee that was at the end and of the city, of the business of the day, instead of sometimes giving a ruling which we have started again and then move on. That is the point that we are raising on that. The fact here we are saying that the determination of the subcommittee was according that the discretion of the presiding officer should not be undermined and that the relevant rule were properly complied with. It is our view that the presiding officer at the time, if we were the one sitting there, we're going to simply adjourn the sitting because of the ends of the business. But the decision that she took was the correct decision under the circumstances. That is the fruit that we have put here. The subsidy ban was members removed, was on the 21st of October 2015 by Honorable Idina. And then two there, the point of the reason that the members to be removed were identified by name, they were automatically suspended by operation of the rules. And then we are raising the issue three that the subcommittee agreed that the circumstances necessitated the application of the Rule 53A and found that the correct procedures were indeed followed. Our view, when we look at the issue briefly, we felt that the presiding officer at that moment took a correct decision. she followed all the procedures, and then in general, we couldn't even find anything wrong writing that decision, despite the fact that we're not meant to review the decision, but just to look at the circumstances that led to a decision being made. And four members removed from National Assembly at the 4th of May, and then we know that that day, the Honourable Speaker ordered a number of members to leave the National Assembly for creating a disturbance and regarding the authority of the cell. Route 53A on then in Hook, and Parliament Protection Services were asked to remove the members who were also identified by name. Our view, Honourable Speaker, the committee agreed that the circumstances necessitated the application of the Rule 53A and found that the correct procedures were followed. It was our view, Honourable Speaker, that everything was done in terms of the rules from 1 until the end, and that the members who had no choice except to request the members then to be removed by protection services. Page 7, Honourable Speaker, those are general comments that we are making. They are really general comments.
Honourable Mutakane, in my document is page 10.
Oh, page 10. Oh, okay. That's point 5, Honourable Speaker. That is general comments and recommendation on the application of Rule 53A. The point that you are making there in terms of parliamentary protection services, our view was that they should be in uniform when performing their official duties. We thought that that will assist us to identify the protection services from other people who may enter. Because what we observe anyway, I think one of the members already made some point on that. And then we have also make a point through there that identification of members ought to leave. The point that you are making is sometimes when there's real havoc in the chamber, it will be difficult to say Honorable Waters, Honorable Masoni, and when the situation is not real, I think we are making a point that the presiding officer should therefore exercise discretion in this regard, depending on the circumstances. Because not every time can, in fact, 149 of the ANC calling each and every one of them can sometimes be very difficult. They should allow the presiding officer sometimes to use that discretion. And then the public participation and access control, Honourable Members of Red is harsh on this matter. We just know that, as you say, it was noted that when the conduct of members of the public in the country becomes directly or indirectly provocative, we just observe that. And that some members of the caravan, when they come in now, they are causing some harm for the chamber. They start insulting members, but they are members of the caravan. We know that the caravan is in a the police should be taking care of that situation. We also make a point that the attention needs to be given to ensuring adequate security measures are in place to control visitors' conduct in the precinct. That is our view of what we have seen anyway. Visitors starting breaking the windows and all that. Not was incorrect for us to do the security. They should have dealt with that. And the point that is for that future reports. We are making a point that future reports from presiding officers on the circumstances of the removal of members should preferably include feedback from the experience of the patient at hand in this case. The point we are making is that she is ordered by the presiding officer to go to a member. But our view is that sometimes we must allow a sergeant arms to explain. Because our observation is that when they go to these members, the members are very rude to them. They simply tell her, get out here. And then sometimes they use it as becoming language. Sometimes it's important to get that before a subcommittee looks at the whole issue in order for a decision to be made for members who insert staff in a precinct of parliament, generally speaking. That's a point on the speaker that we raised in terms of the 3 matters that we referred to the subcommittee to consider. Thank you.
So there's the report of the rest of the meeting of the subcommittee attending to all matters that the Rules Committee had referred to the subcommittee. I now give an opportunity for honourable members of the Rules Committee, this most senior structure constitutionally, to comment on the report. On any matter that we have not yet discussed, should it be necessary. I actually want to curtail that discussion. But I have to give you an opportunity, honourable Mashley.
Honorable Speaker, I think the report is really very clear on the matter that we have dealt with, and the recommendations that have been made are very clear and progressive, and they can assist. I really want to move that we accept the report. Thank you very much.
Honorable Khadebe.
Chairperson, I concur with Honorable Mashida that this is a good report. But on the issue of quoting the court judgment, I would have preferred that it is only when the final appeal process has been finalized. I can make it an example. The only court judgment which has said it cannot be changed is that one of the Concord. But all the other judgments can be changed. So what's going to happen is that they say a person has not yet lodged the appeal, but that court judgment is being used. Just I'll make an example. Somewhere in Parliament is issue number one, and then the process of that court judgment is being challenged left, right, and center. But are we going to allow that to set in the House as a court of debate? That's the concern I'm having. And then on the other issue of the identification of the members, I think that it must also be in the rules that the video footage must be used, but as it is going to be practical for the presiding officer to point name by name, the video footage can be used afterwards so that they can be able to identify specifically who is supposed to be suspended, whatever it might be. Thank you.
Honorable Chief.
I think at point here, and I think that there was probably a misunderstanding of some of us with regard to the outcome of the presentation by the Deputy Speaker. At point here is, can court judgments be cited in the limbo? And even if there might be an appeal, but there is a judgment. There is a standing judgment by any particular court. So I think it's a good point. And I agree with the committee and also the reflection of the Deputy Speaker that indeed judgments and findings of courts can be quoted. That's the long and short of it. That's the long and short of what the committee is saying here. And in line with what the Deputy Speaker said at any rate. So we are in full agreement. If there is another judgment, another finding, we will come to that one later. Because you can't think what the Constitutional Court will say or what the Supreme Court of Appeal. If the High Court of Western Cape says the public protector powers are not binding, now I'm just saying something that I would have quoted. Until then, there were other judgments. I would have quoted that one. So there is nothing untoward with the proposal as it before us.
There is a motion for the report to be adopted. Is there a second? Honorable Boy seconds, and there is no objection. The report has been adopted. Thank you very much. So, honorable members, unless there is any other business. Point six. The Rules Committee report on revised rules. This is now the whole. May I have a motion for the adoption of these rules? Because really, honorable members, we are not going to go rule by rule. We've done that at the end of 2015 already. Honorable Mpumbana?
Move for adoption. Yes, I move for adoption.
Is there a seconder? Before we second, Masilele wants to interfere with our pleasure and progress. Yes, Masilele.
I just wanted to say that principally when the EFF was in attendance, when the rules were adopted in principle in November, they stated their objection. So out of fairness, I think the report will reflect that the EFF did object to the rules.
Yes, the record must note that. Honorable Mazzoni?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Just two things, Chair. One is procedural. When we do this in the House on Thursday, I think it's very important that we remember that we read the read on the record that is the clarification of the Concord judgment. Because if we don't have that read on the record, it's as good as the fact that we didn't get clarification. So that must be I'm assuming Honourable Madakane will read in the House, and he must read on the record the clarifications that we got on those judgments. So it's known that we applied our minds to those judgments. Chair, and then when initially these rules were discussed, you'll remember that one of the biggest bones of contention at the time was the order of business that had been changed in the rules. And Chair, forgive me for being rather cheeky, but we do have a new chief whip. And I'm hoping that, as with many things, we found consensus on issues. And I'd like to know if the chief would be willing to negotiate on certain things with regards to the order of business. Because the way they stand at the moment, we did disagree with them. Honourable Madakane is shaking his head already without even hearing me out. That's disturbing, Honourable Madakane. But we, to a very large extent, Madam Speaker, we have managed to reach consensus on certain things. And that's why I'm hoping that we can have one final stab at trying to find each other somewhere at a meeting point with regards to the order of business.
So what are you saying, Honourable Mazoni, about the order of business matter? What are you proposing?
Chairperson, it's Rule 29 on page 21. If everyone can just get there. Yeah. Chairperson, we must remember that we are the people's parliament, and the people's business must reign supreme, so to speak. And that's why we'd like the matters of MPs to come before other business. And not the way we have it at the moment, Chief. So that's why we raised the objection the first time, and that's why we'll continue to raise the objection.
Honourable Mutagane?
No, it is my view, Honourable Speaker, that we had a long discussion in 2015. We tried to persuade the DA to agree with us on some of the issues. We disagreed. The view was that then the majority decision would then prevail. But we note the objection, Honourable Speaker. We are not dismissing it out of it. We engaged on this matter several times. But we felt very strong that the sequence should remain as we are proposing here. But of course, they have recorded their objection. We take that, Honourable Speaker. If there are other discussion in Chief Whip's forum, for whatever reason, they can be raised with them, but in terms of the rule we've got to shoot, they are adopted as it is.
So when the report has been presented, I think it's important to point out and to highlight the objection of the DA and explain the processes you are doing. So, noting that objection on that, Honourable Waters,
just Speaker, a final appeal on this matter. The fact of the matter, and I'd like the ANC members to hear me out as well, pushing members' business to the bottom of the agenda as a second thought is not a people's parliament. We have encouraged members to bring issues to parliament on behalf of their constituents. We keep telling members to keep doing that. So why not have it, and currently it's the first item on the order paper. Why are we curtailing or diminishing the importance of constituency matters in Parliament? It is, because you're giving the executive, you're putting the executive before constituency matters. And so, Speaker, that's my final, and I just want to say to you, this sort of thing, so please don't take it as a threat. I'm just saying, this could be the make or break for our caucus supporting the rules or not. That's how important it is to us. I'm just putting it out there so you know. Because it would look quite bad if it was just ANC supporting the new rules on Thursday. Thank you.
Honourable Deputy Chief Whip. Thanks, Honourable Speaker. Honorable Speaker, I think we have a forum as members of Parliament where we deal with issues that we want to see on the order paper. So that is the Chief Whip's forum. The honorable members know that they will have to write and send those items for discussion in the next Chief Whip's forum. So why do we want to delay us in this one? I think they must follow the proper channels. We have had many Chief Whip's forums where there were no issues that were raised. Issues for discussions. Why do they want to present now on this one? Thank you. Honorable Mashile?
Chairperson, I just wanted really to support the Chair, Honorable Dagana, that we really discuss this particular matter extensively to really ensure that the order paper should really prioritize the main business of the House. If we are going to pass legislation, we must make sure that we pass legislation. If we are going to pass the budget, must make sure that we pass the budget. The issues of motions or statements or whatever, I mean, everybody has seen how those things can detract us from really dealing with the main business in the House. And nobody says that it should not be done, but I'm just making sure that what we really go to the House to do, it gets done. And then we do the rest. But so I really don't see us actually really making it difficult. I mean, we all have a constituency work that we have to do, that the issues that we have to raise from constituents. Exactly the same as the opposition parties. But we must prioritize the main objective of really convening the House and make sure that that is done. Essential.
Honorable Dudley and Honorable Tijima.
Thank you. Prior to the 5th Parliament, the ACDP would have agreed with the sentiments that the DA has expressed, but in view of what's been taking place and as a whip of smaller parties feel absolutely abused by some of the bigger opposition parties who have actually abused that whole process. So we want to see the rules working in terms of motions. Now, when we see the rules working in terms of motions, then we would be happy to support that sentiment. But while we don't know if the rules are going to work, we do not want to see a change. Thank you.
Honorable Zidiga.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was going to say room for persuasion is always there among parties. However, for now, I think we've agreed with the rules, obviously accepting that not on all of the rules we may cohere. And I think what Honorable Mazoi was raising is that for now they understand that on this rule we are not at one. That doesn't mean stopping the passing of the rule. But also that doesn't mean that in the life past for 5 years we can't continuously engage and persuade each other. I was really going to propose that let's accept the rules as they are. Persuasion is part of the game. It must continue. We can't say they mustn't engage the ANC to persuade or the ACDP to persuade, but there's a point at which we must accept the rules and be able to have a framework from which we must work. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think we've had adequate airing of views and discussion and processing over years on this rule book. May I appeal that we now agree to take this rule book to the House for adoption. Honourable Waters?
Speaker, if I may, one last stab at another issue, if I may. Considering we have a new Chief Whip of the ruling party, governing party, and that is questions, oral questions to ministers. That question should come directly from the floor without notice, as in many, many democracies around the world. This ensures, firstly, I mean, obviously that ministers would know their portfolios or their ministries and the issues at hand, but secondly, it would allow for issues of the day to be raised on the parliamentary floor and not have what often happens, failed questions being asked to ministers because of the time lag between having to submit questions and then them coming to the floor of parliament. There's a huge time delay. And we would like to propose that questions are asked to the ministers directly from the floor.
I think I understand what you're saying. You're taking advantage of having this platform to address the new Chief Whip, and that opportunity indeed was allowed to you, for now, all of us have been through all of this, and really I want us to adopt and agree to take this report to the House. Agreed?
That's not, Speaker, and we've got to leave. We cannot...
You are now walking out?
Yes, we have to.
Why?
There's no negotiations and compromise on the two issues that we have asked for, and that is the order of business and all questions on the books. If the ANC would like to engage us, you are here, but if not...
Okay, Honourable Kubai has been raising her hand, and then take Honourable Deputy Chief Whip.
Thank you, Speaker. I think colleagues are really being unfair. All of us have been here, and Honourable Walters has been commanding issues in the room that there's a new chief. Yes, he's been. No, it's the other one. Before, when he went out, he did. So, smuggling issues on the basis that because there's a new chief, it's unfair. He's said through, he's engaged. But secondly, it can be that when there's a disagreement on certain issues, because we've had to decide to agree on certain issues that we were not comfortable with, right? We never know. There are a number of issues. But I'm just saying, if this is, it can be correct as a rule of engagement, that you throw tantrums where you feel that you are not taking your way, it's wrong. Let's engage fairly. When we disagree, point it out as we've been doing. If we're disagreeing, this is the areas of disagreements, let's flag them so that the report are flagging. To say now you're walking out because there are two issues that you are trying to get and therefore you're throwing, I just feel that we are throwing tantrums unnecessarily. Let's be mature about the things that you're discussing and agree on them.
Honourable Speaker, I agree with Honourable Kubai. We dealt with this issue in the subcommittee. So it's unfair for them to bring it back now, trying to smuggle it back. We dealt with it, and Honourable Waters was not part of that meeting. I remember very well, he was not part. And discussing a matter in a committee, if we don't agree, doesn't mean that you should walk out. That is cowardness. You can't do that. It's not either your way or our way. You are, your view was defeated in the subcommittee, so it cannot be that your view was defeated, then you decide to walk out. We know that you are transcending and trying to take over from the EFF. Please be the reasonable opposition party that you are supposed to be. Please.
Honorable Koranov.
Chairperson, I think I must appeal to the DA to be reasonable. If we look at the first one, the order of business, the first part of sub-rule 1 says what is the order, and rule 2 says in condition it will be put. So the order will be there. So I fail to understand in your argument to say that issues from constituency offices are not on the order of the business. It is there. It's the order that has changed because of Honourable Dudley. What we've discussed up teens time in the fifth parliament, we see it doesn't work. So we don't take away motions without notice or formal motions. It's on the order paper. It's an addition after the formal business. I think it's reasonable, and I appeal really to the DA not to grandstand on this one or make it a go into the trenches on this one. The second one is on the questions. If I understand it correctly, we've discussed in our different caucuses for a long time. We came back, we agreed on it. To reopen a debate on the eve of adopting the rules, I think is not fair play.
Honourable Titiva.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. I think we are all agreed, as I said earlier, that in any debate or any engagement, there are points at which you may not get entirely what you want. And I think all of us, when we started in this process, which has taken very long, and one must admire the patience of the Speaker, because if you recall, Speaker, in your view, we should have passed this much earlier. But to allow parties to persuade one another, because we are trying to ensure that there is inclusivity in the manner in which we deal with these rules, because it is the rules that will govern all of us as members of the National Assembly and Parliament, respectively. In that process, all of us moved from the points from which we were standing. That's the puzzle that we ended up discussing, Honourable Speaker, on the issues of Rule 53. We were at completely different points, but we were persuaded and moved tremendously. You recall even on the issue of the protection service. Initially, the ANC's point was that we stick by what is on the Powers and the Privileges Act, which was security services. But we're persuaded by other parties, we finally came to a compromise of having a protection service. We even at that time, and I would want to remind members, some of us proposed that those members should be former members of the force. Again, we're persuaded. So I'm just using this as an illustration of how all of us have moved from our positions as we were discussing these rules. And I think on the question, the issue that has been raised by Honourable Waters, while we appreciate that there must be spontaneity, I think we have a breed of that in my view. We've got written questions for oral reply, but when it's follow-up, no minister ever knows what is a follow-up question from any member of parliament, which is indeed spontaneous. And therefore ministers, so it's a hybrid actually that we've had. And I think for now, Honourable Speaker, I would argue that we retain that, precisely because some of the issues that members raise are of a technical nature. Standing there as a minister, when somebody says, and I would use my previous experience in the executive, if somebody says, how many land claims have you already processed, I wouldn't at the top of my head say 50 or 20. And if I were to say so, then tomorrow one member may say, you lied, you know. So I think for now, Honourable members, I would appeal to you, Honourable Waters and the cohort at large, that for now, let's appreciate where we are in our democracy, in trying to exercise our role of oversight and so on. We are not yet at this stage, no matter how ideal it is, where we can say it would just be possible to have questions from the floor as and when, you know, it's the oral question. As I said, that the current practice actually offers both, in my view. It is a hybrid, and I think it is working. And I would appeal that there can't be the matters of breaking the process in which we are in. And to also indicate, Honourable Members, as I said earlier, passing these rules as we have done, even earlier when we passed the interim one, is an indication that we continuously engage. There may be, in August, one of the members of Parliament say, I think because of a particular circumstance, the rules so and so must be looked into. I've never heard the chair of the Rules Committee saying, no, we can't look at the rules. I mean, the example, for instance, Speaker, of last week, there was an issue that Honourable Stainless and raised. As the Speaker, Chair of Rules Committee, you never said, we're not going to look at that issue. You accommodated it because it was a matter of consent to a member, and you say the subcommittee must look at it. This has been the practice of how we've continuously worked in this Parliament. And I really would plead that we shouldn't find ourselves in a position where our posture means we can't put our country first. Because I think, for me, it's not about us and parties all the time. There are points at which we look at issues and say, in the interest of moving forward, this position is necessary. It might be a middle route. And I will really persuade the colleagues in the DA that on this one, it's a matter that we can continuously engage going forward, but I think for now we're at the point where we need to create the framework around which we must operate going forward. And I really would appeal that it wouldn't be after the journey we've walked and after all of us have moved from different positions that we can now come at a point where we say we're walking away. I don't think it would be correct. No, showing leadership on all of us to be able to do so. Thank you, sir.
Member Waters?
And Honourable Mashile and Honourable Julian.
Thank you, Speaker. Speaker, I don't think using words like smuggling or tantrums or what was the other word used? Childish, trying to up to the EFF vote while they're trying to reach compromises at all. I don't, as far as throwing tantrums is concerned, we don't think anyone has a voice here. I think we've been talking as adults to each other. We haven't tried to smuggle anything in. We've raised these issues consistently, and I think you all would agree with that. So we haven't tried to smuggle something in the 54th hour of negotiations. And we're not trying to undo the EFF. We haven't broken any furniture here. You haven't had to call security services in. So I don't think that is fair, actually. Just on the matter, on the issue of questions, while we do have follow-up questions, and it's quite right, the minister doesn't know what's going to come, you are restricted to the original question. Oh. And often, not always, but often, those questions are updated and failed. Because you've got to submit them, and correct me if I'm wrong, 14 days or something beforehand, 2 weeks. So by the time it comes up, those issues have long gone, actually. You know, the media cycle and events move very quickly. And it should be issues that are affecting a particular department that maybe happened that day or day before. And so that's what our reasoning. So I don't believe we have a hybrid system. And then lastly, we are putting the country first and Parliament first before our party, because we want the business of MPs and constituents to be first on the agenda, not last. So in our view, we are putting the country and Parliament first and not the executive, which is what the proposal is. So that's where we come from. But Chairperson, Speaker, with all due respect, I don't think we're going to reach any compromise here. We will take these rules to our caucus on Thursday, and we will present them. And they will make a decision as to whether they, as a collective, as a party, we support these rules or not. But we don't see any point in us remaining here, so we're going to be leaving now. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Yeah, first, one really just wanted to raise the point that what is the intention of asking a question in the House? It is to ask the question on behalf of your constituency, to actually source responses for your constituents. And therefore, it is important that you get a holistic, well-resourced answer that will actually assist the constituents. If, you know, a spontaneous question on the basis of a question on the order paper or question paper, at least the minister has got an area that is prepared to actually answer all questions on that particular matter. But then if you ask a question that the minister is not even aware of that particular incident, and the minister says, I will come back on that, the question then doesn't achieve anything. It doesn't achieve anything. And I think they should just understand that it is important that the questions that they ask, then they get a comprehensive response that is beneficial to the constituents that they are asking on behalf of. Thanks.
No, I don't know that it's still relevant really for us to continue engaging with people who are gone, because then people who need persuasion are the ones who've just left the room. Now, unfortunately, we don't have a quorum to take a decision, because the quorum is not there. Masbele, are you getting any joy in terms of the quorum?
And as it stands now, we were on, we need 23 members to form a quorum. We were on 23. So the 3 members of the deal are now left, which breaks the quorum. So we are just trying to see if there's space for co-option.
Honourable Dadi,
Thank you. I just wanted to say, we would like to actually see the issue of questions being put on the order paper, but not for the purpose of doing it the way that you have proposed, but for the purpose of doing the result. In other words, finding a way that we can actually update those questions a little bit better, make sure things are more current. So we'd like to see it on the agenda so that it can be discussed for the outcome rather than the way it is.
Agenda of the Rules Committee to engage on an ongoing basis to improve
on the outcome, yes.
But otherwise to adopt the rules.
Absolutely.
That's what we need.
Absolutely. And then just on that issue of a people's parliament, when people come to parliament to listen to certain debates and they have to sit there, or they have to leave at 5 o'clock or 7 o'clock and they haven't heard debate, that's not a people's parliament. When people are sitting in front of the TV and they've been held and they still don't get to see the debate that they were trying to see until hours later, that argument of affecting a people's parliament is no argument at all, because the way it is, it's been affecting it.
Speaker, thank you. It is actually a pity that Honourable Waters was given an opportunity to speak before we have come to the floor, simply because I think it is this very disingenuous of the DA to in fact come with these proposals. Not far from here, Speaker, about 2 kilometres, we have the Western Cape Provincial Legislature. And certainly they do not have the question provision that the Honourable Waters now wants to foist upon us and in fact wants to blackmail us with. Secondly, as far as the sequence of business in the Western Cape Legislature is concerned, they do not even have a structure such as the Program Committee where parties can engage and participate in decision making on what goes onto the order. They in fact have a very small group of the governing party determining what the sequence of proceedings will be. So it is sincerely disingenuous from the Democratic Alliance, after years of deliberation and after they have removed members who participated in the deliberations and in fact in the end agreed it was a fair provision, Rule 29, where you have the balance between processing the orders of the governing party whilst at the same time giving opportunity for all parties, including small parties, to participate and to move matters on the floor of the House. So it is a pity because their previous representatives understood, but that is the problem. Every time that they agree to something within the confines of a meeting, then they are removed and other people have to override. And that was also the problem that we've seen in the past 2 years, Honourable Speaker. We have been so close to agreement until a new element, the new kid on the block came in. And then all of a sudden, it appears that the largest opposition party wanted to now renegotiate everything that they've agreed to before. And we don't think that that is fair. Thank you.
Just need, if we can get 3 members to be co-opted, we think it is safer that we get those 3 members. There was a debate among ourselves whether we had in fact adopted or not adopted. Because there was a few that said we had actually adopted before the DA announced the workout. But we want to play safe. We think it is better that we are sure, and there's no doubt about whether there's a quorum or no quorum. So we are really asking the ANC whips to assist us with the co-option of 3 members so that they are quorum, and we know that we're safe on the side of the rules having been adopted properly. Yeah.
In fact, I kept seeing fingers rise, and it would be one finger. So what am I understanding? Do we need 3 or do we need 1?
We'll advise you. We need 23 members all in all, but Mr. Rosalind Kovisa is heading to that, so we probably need 2 now. And Mr. Boy and Mr. Frode must come back.
Ma'am, we still need to formally co-opt 2 of the sitting members of the ANC who are here. Once we've done that, we'll co-rate.
members could just stay inside, that would help.
Wesalo ngicela ungincede mina kunomuntu umfo oye wa proposa ubaba uMpumlwana emhlambo the second what does that emphasize when the PA was here there was a mover by ubaba uMpumlwana and a seconder by nomngani wami wa prophet as a Gauteng. But that's why I wasn't sure what it is that we're doing.
We then indeed were diverted by the intervention of Warhaz. Now, what the Secretary of the NA has proposed is that let us just go out of our way to be safe, to have the numbers, take it that we are not counting the DA now, because they are making their point, which indeed must be on record. But right now, we want to put the report to this meeting now that we believe we do have a quorum.
Madam, we do have a quorum. We just want to announce that the following members have been co-opted. Honorable Mashaba, Honorable Korai, Honorable Tseke, and Honorable Khoza, in terms of rule. In 134.
We also
that's
have
right.
Honorable Godin.
He's a member of the committee. They are members.
Oh,
the
they are both members.
We have co-opted those who are not really members of the committee.
Okay.
So we do have a quorum, ma'am, on that. Just one thing that I think we have now adopted. In terms of guidelines, there are guidelines that are supposed to be agreed by the program committee, not by the rules committee. That is a guideline dealing with declarations of vote on the main appropriation bill. So even though it's in the report, we'll take it out of the report, that particular guideline. We'll take it to the program committee, because it's for that committee to agree to it. Otherwise, we can proceed.
All right. I think, for the record, we will also add the honorable member that continue to stream in. No, we're being thorough now. Nobody must hold us on procedure. Honorable Mkagane?
Honorable Madam Speaker, I move for the approval of the rule book as presented by the subcommittee.
Honorable Dane has moved. May I have a seconder? And Honorable Mpumlwana has seconded. Is there any objection to this rule book being adopted for presentation to the plenary sitting on Thursday? There is no objection. This rule book has now been agreed upon, and we hope that we will be able to report to South Africa that we now have an amended and agreed rule book. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned. Let's go and enjoy lunch. Thank you.